mindfulness in daily life, instructed by Venerable Bente Pima Runzi. So before the Dhamma talk, we're going to give you guys a quick introduction about the sponsor organization, Kudu Buddhist Society. In order to spread the teachings of Buddha and let more people know about Buddhism, the English session was founded in 2007. And next, I'm going to move on to the regular activities we have. So I've done my introduction. I'm going to pass to Nader to give you guys an introduction about our speaker tonight. So come, Nader.
Good evening, everyone. This is Nader Alawadi. I'm a graduate student here at Purdue University in the Electrical Computer Engineering Department. We're very happy and honored to have our speaker here at Purdue. Bande Bimalaranti is a distinguished American Buddhist monk with more than 4 years of practice in meditation. He's highly respected meditation teacher and leads retreats in Europe, Asia, and North America. Bande is the founder and abbot of the Dhammasuka Meditation Center near St. Louis, Missouri. He's also the American representative to the World Buddhist Summit in Japan. Bande authored numerous books about Dhamma and meditation, among them the Anapanasati Sutta, A Guide to Tranquil Wisdom Meditation, and Breath of Love. His main interest is in practicing meditation by going back to the earliest Buddhist scriptures to find out what the Buddha really taught. Out of this investigation, he developed the Tranquil Wisdom Insight Meditation Technique, which is completely based on the suttas. So without further ado, please join me in welcoming Bante Bimalaranti.
This is going to be a talk on mindfulness in your daily activities. Can anybody tell me what mindfulness is? And I want an answer.
Being fully present?
Kind of.
Being aware?
Kind of.
Dropping the self and dedicating everything to the well-being of all beings.
Not even close. I'm going to give you a definition of mindfulness. This works 100% of the time. And that it's starting to turn into a key word that a lot of people are using, especially in psychology and psychotherapy, and they're putting their own definitions on it. I read a magazine that they were discussing with three major teachers what mindfulness was. At the end of the article, they said, well, we're going to have to do this again with some other teachers because we really didn't find out anything about mindfulness. Okay, here's the definition. Mindfulness is remembering to observe how mind's attention moves from one thing to another. Okay? Now, if you use the word mindfulness and you use this definition, you will find that it changes your entire meditation. Mindfulness means to be aware. Yeah. You see what I mean? When you start observing how mind's attention moves, you start seeing that there's a process that occurs. Now, a lot of people have what we call in Buddhism hindrances. What's a hindrance? Anything that pulls your attention away from what you're doing while you're doing it. The Buddha said there was basically five hindrances. I say there's only really one, and I call it a distraction. When a hindrance arises, it causes your mind to think. Before we get going too far, I have another question for you. In Buddhism, there's a lot of discussion about craving. What is it? How do you recognize it? How do you let it go?
Being aware of it?
Mindfulness.
A little bit different than that. Okay.
To let it go, can you realize that whatever it is you're craving isn't permanent?
Well, but what is it? What is craving? How are you supposed to recognize craving when it comes up?
It's a desire.
Okay, that's the surface definition.
Feverishness?
Tricky.
It's like a hunger?
Well, let's do it this way. Your brain is in two parts, right? Like this, right? You have a membrane that goes around your brain called the meninges. The meninges is a bag that holds your brain together, basically, but it also goes all the way down your spine. Every time you have a thought, every time you have a feeling, every time you have a sensation, it causes the brain to expand against the meninges. This causes tension and tightness. It's not big, it is subtle. Every time you have a thought, there's tightness in your head, in your mind. So, you need to learn how to relax that. Now, I teach meditation all over the world. One of the things that a lot of Asians, they don't like this idea, but there's no difference between Asian minds and Western minds. There's no difference at all. It all works in exactly the same way. I have a lot of Chinese students that are very, very successful with the meditation. I have a lot of Western students that are very, very successful with the meditation, and they're doing it exactly in the same way. Every time you have a thought, it causes tightness to arise. When you recognize that there's tightness there, you're seeing the beginning of the I like it, I don't like it mind. You're made up of five things, a psychophysical process. You have a body. You have feeling. This is not emotion. This is just feeling. Feeling is pleasant or painful, or neither painful nor pleasant. You have perception. Perception is the part of your mind that names things. You see this and you say, that's a book. Perception is a part of your mind that put that name on this. You have thoughts and you have consciousness. When a feeling arises, it doesn't matter whether it's a pleasant feeling or a painful feeling or a neutral feeling, when a feeling arises, right after that craving arises. If it's a pleasant feeling, I like it. If it's a painful feeling, I don't like it. This is the very beginning of the false idea in a personal self. Right after the craving, you have clinging. Clinging is all of your thoughts, all of your opinions, all of your ideas, and stories about why you like or dislike that feeling. Right after that, this is where the emotional tendency starts to occur. This, in Pali, they call it bhava. I define that differently than almost every other Buddhist that I've run across, and I call it habitual tendency. But this is your habitual emotional tendency. Now, a lot of people, don't stand with your arms closed, please. Thank you. A lot of people, especially nowadays, they really get caught up in depression. Don't hold your arms like that, please. What is depression? How does depression arise? How do you get rid of it? Depression. Painful feeling. I don't like that painful feeling. I have all kinds of stories about why I don't like that painful feeling. And then what I try to do is get caught up in the habitual tendency of trying to think the feeling away. But thoughts are one thing, and feelings are something else. And the two never meet. The more you try to think a feeling away, the bigger and more intense that feeling becomes. Then you go run in your room and close all the blinds and say, "Leave me alone, I'm depressed." What I teach is how to overcome all of these kind of things with right effort. Now, right effort is part of the Eightfold Path, right? It's amazing how many people teach meditation and they're supposed to be Buddhist and they don't practice right effort. Now, I teach it in a little bit different way. One of my students, when I first came back to America. I was in Asia for 12 years. I came back to America and he said, "This is what you're teaching." And he called it the 5 R's. I have since changed it to 6 R's, but this is right effort. You recognize that your mind is distracted away from what you're doing. You release the distraction by not keeping your attention on the distraction. You relax the tightness caused by that distraction. You have to bring up something wholesome now. Smile. I'll tell you how important smiling is in a minute. And then you bring that smiling mind back to your object of meditation and stay with your object of meditation for as long as you can. I've been a monk for 30 years. When I first started being a monk, I was in Thailand at the time, and I was told, if you want to learn anything about meditation and have deep concentration, it's going to take you 15 years. I wasn't too interested in that. ran across some Sri Lanka monks that were traveling in Thailand, and they laughed. They said, "Oh, you have to come to Thailand. It only takes 10, or to Sri Lanka. It only takes 10 years. When I give a retreat, if you have not gotten into a deep stage of meditation by the second day, I start asking you why. I only give 10-day retreats. Why? Because you will know more about yourself and how the practice works in 10 days than you ever thought possible. And why do I say something that sounds like I'm really boasting? Because I read you what the Buddha said. And I read from this book. This is the middle link sayings. And I spend a long time explaining what the Buddha was talking about. And I encourage you not to believe a word that I say. See it for yourself. In a short period of time, you will be successful when you practice right effort. Now, the smiling part of right effort. Why do I want you to smile? Because it feels good. When you smile all the time, your mindfulness improves, not just a little bit. So this helps your mindfulness and helps your mind to be uplifted. That's what the Buddha's trying to show us, isn't it? How to be happy. I mean, in the Dhammapada, it says, we're the happy ones. What's the expression for being happy? Smiling. I've had students that have really had trouble with meditation. This one man was bipolar, and he was really not good. And he wanted to learn meditation. So I told him how. And he just couldn't do it. So I said, okay, I don't want you to sit in meditation at all. I don't want you to do anything except you have to smile all day. You have to smile to everybody that you see. And when you can't smile, I want you to laugh. Now, meditation teachers aren't supposed to teach this. It's serious stuff. Well, if it's serious stuff, then be seriously happy. I told him he had to do that for a week. And when I give instructions in the meditation, the first day, I will tell you that you're going to hear something you've never heard any other meditation teacher show you. I want you to have fun. I want you to smile. I want you to laugh. Why? Because that helps you to have an uplifted mind. When you have joy in your mind is very alert, your mind is very agile, and you can see when your mind starts to let go and becomes caught in the mud. So then you laugh. What good is laughing? Have you ever heard a meditation teacher tell you to laugh? You laugh with yourself at how crazy your mind can be. Because it is. And welcome to the human race. We're all crazy. And it's okay to be crazy. When you laugh with yourself for getting caught by some emotional upset, You go from, I'm angry, I don't like that, to, it's only anger. It changes your perspective. That's the first fold of the Eightfold Path, isn't it? Right view. Change your perspective. Change your perspective from, I am that, and taking it personally and building up so much emotional garbage that you can't get out of it for a long period of time. Or you laugh with yourself for how dumb your mind can be, and then it's only this anger. Well, I have a choice now. What am I going to do? Am I going to carry this anger around with me all day or not? Well, anybody in their right mind wouldn't do that. They'd let it go. So it's real important for you to understand that, let me explain this in a different way. I don't know, how long am I supposed to talk tonight? Because I get carried away.
Until 8:30, and then we're going to have...
Okay, 8:30, ooh. Okay. I have done a lot of meditation. I've done at least 12 3-month retreats. I've done an 8-month retreat. I've done a 2-year retreat. The kind of meditation that I was practicing was the Burmese style of mindfulness. They call it vipassana. With all of the retreats that I did, and with all the people that I sat with, I only saw this kind of face. Trying really hard. And I noticed in all of those retreats that the teacher kept on saying, you have to try harder. You have to push more. I had one teacher tell me, there's 50,000 seconds in a day. I want you to note 50,000 times. And when I decided to go to the suttas and start reading those instead of reading commentaries, I found out that that wasn't what the Buddha taught. My biggest problem as a teacher is getting you to stop trying so hard. Don't push it. I teach loving kindness meditation for a few reasons. One, you have insight arise with the loving kindness meditation. Two, your progress in the meditation is faster with loving kindness meditation than with any other kind of meditation that you've ever done or can run across. That's why it only takes 10 days. And loving kindness meditation is something you can carry with you with your daily activities. I tell you, I want you to smile. When you come and do a retreat, if I see you're not smiling, I will remind you that you need to smile. I don't care if you're sitting. I don't care if you're eating. I don't care if you're taking a shower. I don't care what you're doing. You have to smile. It keeps your mind light. Keeps your awareness very clear. And it has a tendency to bring up joy. Now, when I was doing this kind of meditation, with the Burmese style. I was told in no uncertain, when joy arose, don't be attached. And I didn't want to be attached. So I was pushing this joy away. Well, that's one of the reasons why you learn the meditation, so you can be joyful. So you can have a light mind, so your mind can be alert. So, after 20 years of very intense practice, I was successful with the meditation. But I didn't believe what they were telling me. Oh, you attain Nibbana. Okay. Now, the thing that you have to understand is there are ways that you test for yourself to see if a teacher is telling you something correctly or not. I told you that there's five precepts, or there's five hindrances that arise for everybody. It happens during your daily activities. It happens while you sit in meditation. When you practice meditation with the six R's, you will start to recognize hindrances when they first come up. I was taught that whenever a hindrance arose when I was sitting in meditation, I was to push it down, to stop it, to crush it, to make it go away. And as a result, I was keeping my attention on it. And what happened? It got bigger. And it didn't go away. And it caused me immeasurable amounts of suffering. When I got back to reading the suttas, I started seeing that the Buddha practiced that way for a little while, and he said, doesn't work. You're supposed to make the hindrances that arise your best friends. Hindrances, when they take your mind away from your object of meditation, are showing you exactly where your attachment is. What is attachment? I am that. I am angry. I want. I'm restless. I have doubt. I'm lazy. Now, when these hindrances arise, they cause this tightness to arise in your head. What is your attachment? I am that. What is the definition of craving? I am. I like. I don't like. Isn't that something? How do hindrances arise? Do you know what the precepts are? The first precept, don't kill or harm living beings on purpose. Second precept, don't steal anything. Third precept, don't have wrong sexual activity. I'll give you the definitions in a minute. Fourth precept, don't lie. Don't curse. Don't gossip. Fifth precept, in college, I know this is a tough one, don't drink or take drugs. Now, the precept on sexual activity, no having wrong sexual activity. Don't have sexual activity that causes pain to anyone else. Don't have sexual activity with somebody else's mate. Don't have sexual activity with somebody that's too young. Outside of that, it's up to you to make up your own mind. But having sexual activity that causes pain, that's something that you have to learn to let go of, not indulge in. So these precepts are pretty easy to follow. But when you break a precept and then you sit in meditation, you're going to have a hindrance arise. And that hindrance can drive you crazy if you fight with it, if you try to control it, if you try to make it go away. Whatever arises in the present moment and what you do with it dictates what's going to happen in the future. That's karma. You make your own choices. If you try to fight with what arises in the present moment, if you try to change what arises in the present moment, if you try to force the present moment to be the way you want it to be, that is the cause of suffering. Now, you have a choice that you can make with whatever arises. You can accept it. You can allow it to be there, not fight with it, and not keep your attention on it. And eventually, that will fade away by itself. That's how you purify your mind. Every time you use the six R's, you recognize when your mind is distracted. You release the distraction by not keeping your attention on it. That's what most people call letting go. Okay. This one extra step that the Buddha put in changes the entire meditation. And that is relax the tightness caused by that distraction. Let it be. When you relax that tightness in your head, in your mind, you will feel kind of an opening, an expansion that happens in your mind. And you'll notice there's no thoughts. There's no distractions. Your mind is very clear. Your mind is very bright. And your mind is pure. Why is it pure? Because you have let go of craving. You bring that pure mind back to your object of meditation, smile, light mind, back to your object of meditation of sending loving and kind thoughts to somebody else. This is why this meditation works so fast. Now, I teach a different way of doing the meditation because that's what the Buddha taught. And I'm following his directions pretty precisely. Almost everybody that's practicing meditation in the world, your mind is on your object of meditation, it gets distracted. Let go of the distraction, immediately come back to your object of meditation, right? What are you doing when you do that? If you don't have that relaxed step, you're not letting go of the craving, so you're bringing the craving back to your object of meditation. And that takes you off of the Buddha's path. You start hearing terms like access concentration, absorption concentration, moment-to-moment concentration, kanika samadhi. You're hearing all of these kind of things that aren't in the suttas. They are in the commentaries. When you practice what I teach, your mind is on your object of meditation, that's the same. Your mind gets distracted, that's the same. You let the distraction go, that's the same. You only add one extra thing. Relax the tightness caused by that distraction. Smile. Bring that smiling mind back to your object of meditation. You will start to stay with your object of meditation naturally for longer and longer periods of time. Now, there's some confusion with some of the concepts in Buddhism. The Buddha talked a lot about jhana practice. The Brahmins, they took the word jhana and said, this is absorption, this is deep concentration, this is one-pointed concentration. The only way you can get into jhana is by this method. The Buddha's definition of the word jhana is, this is a level or stage of your understanding. Understanding what? How mind's attention moves from one thing to another. Does that sound familiar? Oh, that means mindfulness, doesn't it? It's real interesting for people to come and start doing practice with me, especially if they've never done any meditation before. Because the progress in meditation is so fast, they don't know what's happening, and I'm not going to tell them. The thing with the jhana practice is you can build up a lot of pride. I've got the second jhana. I'm something special. Hey, I've got fourth jhana. I'm really good. I don't tell you what jhana you're in. You don't need to know what jhana you're in. The only reason I bring up the word jhana is so that you can understand you're at different levels and you will see your own progress and become very happy with it in a short period of time. I have to know what jhana you're in so I know how to talk to you and know the questions I need to ask you about, okay, you're in this jhana, do you have this experience? That's the only need for that. Now, there's another set of stages of meditation that are called arupa jhana. A means no, rupa means material. Now you're in a mental realm. When you get into this mental realm, you're really going to understand what you're doing with the meditation. And it really, really does get to be fun. It's amazing how much fun you have wishing other people happiness and knowing that they are experiencing that. Because when you come and do a retreat, you're sitting with other people and you're seeing them all smiling and happy. And you start be smiling and happy, and your mind says, yeah, this is good. This is really nice. Because this is a short talk, I'm used to giving talks that are 2 hours or more. I'm not going to get into too much of the deeper jhanas. But let's say that you're sitting in meditation and a hindrance arises. You're restless. You feel agitated, whatever. That's part of restlessness too. And you recognize that your mind has pulled you away from your meditation. What a lot of people teaching meditation will tell you is, push that away. Don't pay attention to it. Just come back to your object of meditation. But that's not what I say. I say, recognize that your mind is distracted. You're going to have distracting thoughts. It's okay to have distracting thoughts. It has to be okay because that's the truth. When a distracting thought arises, it's there. Your job is not to try to stop it, not to try to change it, not to try to force it to be the way you want it to be. Your job is to allow it to be there by itself. Relax the tightness caused by that distraction. Smile. Bring that smiling mind back to your object of meditation. But my mind gets distracted again. Okay, so what? Do it again. Every time you let go of a distraction, you let it be, you relax, you smile, you come back. You're improving your mindfulness. You will start to stay on your object of meditation for a longer period of time. The time that you're distracted away is going to be less and less. Now, it takes two to tango. It takes two to fight. And when a hindrance comes up and I don't like it, I'm going to try to control it. And it pushes back. And it gets stronger. And you push back more. And it gets stronger. So what I'm suggesting is let that be there by itself. Don't fight with it. And if it doesn't have anything pushing against it, it gets weak. When that hindrance gets weak, it will finally disappear on its own. When it disappears, you will feel a very strong relief. You've let go of an attachment. Right after that, you have joy arise. Now, there's five different kinds of joy. Three kinds of joy arise for anybody at any time. The conditions are right. The first kind of joy, you get like goosebumps. It's a little happy feeling. It's there for a short time, goes away. The next kind of joy is like a flash of lightning. It's real intense for a short period of time, disappears. The next kind of joy is like standing in the ocean and you just have these gentle little waves rush over you. Ah, nice. Okay, these three kinds of joy arise for anybody when conditions are right. The next two kinds of joy only arise through mental development. The next kind of joy is called uplifting joy. When this kind of joy arises, you feel very light in your body. You feel very light in your mind. And there's some excitement in there, and this feels good. This is the kind of joy that will arise right after you let go of a hindrance. the last kind of joy is called the awakening factor of joy. That's where it's called all-pervading joy. And it just goes through every cell in your body and your mind, and it doesn't have so much excitement in it, but it really is comfortable and really nice. Now, when these last two kinds of joy arise, they'll be there for a period of time, and then they fade away. When they fade away, you will feel very strong tranquility, and you will feel very comfortable in your mind and in your body. This is what the Buddha called happiness. Your mind by itself stays on your object of meditation without much in the way of distraction at all. This is called unification of mind. I've just described to you exactly what happens when you get into the first jhana. One of the things that most people that are practicing meditation, they get into a jhana. When they get up, they lose their concentration. They go back to their daily life. You can carry this joy and happiness with you into your daily life. In other words, the jhana that you experience can be with you all the time if you remember. Remember what? Remember to be happy. Remember to send somebody kind, loving thoughts. Sounds too good to be true, huh? That's only the first jhana. I can show you, it takes more than a one-day retreat, unfortunately. By the third day, you will experience a lot of the jhanas, and your confidence is going to be so strong because you're seeing it work. This is not philosophy. You're seeing it work in yourself. And you're seeing how your mind works. And you're seeing how you cause yourself suffering. Now, the whole thing with what the Buddha teaches us is he's teaching us to be completely responsible for ourselves. Nothing out there, nothing that happens out there causes you suffering. You cause your own suffering. Oh, but they said something I don't like. I? Where am I? Now, when you're sitting in meditation, here's another for example, and you have a pain arise. Did you ask that pain to come up? Can you make that pain go away? So it's not yours, right? But if you don't like that feeling, what happens? You start to have a lot of thoughts about it. God, I hate this pain when it comes up. I wish it would stop. Why does it have to bother me now? See, I know all of these things because I went through them too. So the first thing you have to do is let go of your thinking about it and relax the tightness caused by that. Next, you'll see there's a tight mental hold wrapped around that feeling. I don't like it. I want it to stop. I want it to go away. I am causing myself more suffering. So you have to allow that feeling to be there. What most people do when they have a painful feeling arise in their knee or wherever it happens to be, is they grab onto it and then squeeze. And that's like taking a red hot coal and putting it in your hand, and you say, oh, that hurts. I'm going to make it stop hurting by squeezing and making it worse. What the Buddha said to do is recognize that you're causing your own pain. Let it be. Everything in Buddhism is about allowing it to be and seeing it with a balanced mind. I am a very successful meditation teacher because anybody that comes to me, if they're there for the whole 10 days and they follow directions, will at least have a very balanced mind by the time they get done with the meditation. And this is something that you can carry with you in life. What happens when your mind starts going in emotional, I like this, I don't like that. I like it, I don't like it. And you do that all day. What do you feel like when you get home? I'm exhausted. I gotta go lay down. When you start to learn how your mind works, and how this is truly an impersonal process. Your ups and downs are still going to happen in your daily life. There's going to be things that are tough and not so tough, but it's going to be more like waves. You're not going to get caught in the ecstasy of being oh so happy and then crash and be oh so miserable. Learning how to have a balanced mind is the key. I'll give you another example. When I went to Jakarta, Indonesia, and I started feeling pain. And that's an unusual thing, so I went to the doctor. And he says, I got an MRI. He comes back. He says, you have appendicitis. I want to take it out tomorrow. Okay, fine. He said, this can be a serious operation. And I said, okay, fine. But you don't understand. This is really, it can be very serious and it can be life-threatening. And I said, okay, fine. Well, he said, aren't you worried about it? And I said, you're a good doctor, right? He said, yeah, I've done this a lot. I said, well, I don't have to worry about it. It's you that needs to worry. And he came in the next day after the operation. He said, how do you feel? I said, a little bit of pain, not much. No big deal. Oh, you got to be careful and take care of it and... It was really going on a lot more. And I kept on going, okay, I'll do that. Yeah, I'm listening. And again, he said, you're not worried about anything, are you? I said, no. Why do I need to worry? Tell me one good reason to worry. Is there any good that comes out of it? No. Well, why do it then? The little scabs that happened because of the operation were gone in 4 days, and I haven't felt any pain since. But a lot of that is attitude. if I'm going to worry about something, I'm certainly going to pick something bigger than that to worry about. Well, the world can end. Well, why do I want to worry about that? So, that just means got to die, start over again. Okay. No big deal. We've been doing it from time immemorial. We ought to be pretty good at it by now. So why worry about, oh, the politics are such and such, and there's wars going on all over. Do you want to affect the world around you in a positive way? If you do, smile and wish other people happiness. And don't just do it once in a while. Do it all the time. That's what I teach you in a 10-day retreat. And a lot about how to keep a balanced mind no matter what's happening. How not to take things personally and make yourself suffer. Oh, but they said something mean to me and I don't like it and I'm mad. I am taking it all personally. Why would I even listen to somebody that says something that's negative like that? Oh, but they're a friend. I have something to show you. Okay, this is from a sutta called the Simile of the Saw. There are these five courses of speech that others may use when they address you. Their speech may be timely or untimely, true or untrue, gentle or harsh, connected with good or with harm, spoken with a mind of loving kindness or with inner hate. When others address you, their speech may be timely or untimely. When others address you, their speech may be true or untrue. When others address you, their speech may be gentle or harsh. When others address you, their speech may be connected with good or with harm. When others address you, their speech may be spoken with a mind of loving kindness or inner hate. You should train thus. Our minds will remain unaffected, and we shall utter no evil words. We shall abide compassionate for that other person's welfare with a mind of loving kindness. Without inner hate, we shall abide providing that person with a mind imbued with loving kindness. And starting with him, we shall abide pervading the all-encompassing world with a mind imbued with loving kindness, abundant, exalted, immeasurable, without hostility and without ill will. That is how you should train. Now, what did that just say? It doesn't matter what somebody else says to you. If you start radiating loving, use that person as the reminder to radiate loving kindness to him, and then walk away wishing everybody else around you happiness, you are beginning to affect the world around you in a positive way. I had a very famous teacher. He was a Burmese, the smartest man I've ever met. And he had a stroke. And I was in Thailand at the time. So I heard that he was in the hospital and he had a stroke. And I started radiating loving kindness to him. wishing him a mind that's open and accepting, not resisting what was happening with himself. About 2 weeks later, I got a note from him in the mail. He never wrote me a note before, thanking me for sending him loving kindness. How did he know I was doing that? He didn't even know where I was, except we had a mutual friend. You want to affect the world around you in a positive way? Learn to smile all the time. Wish happiness. It doesn't matter what somebody else says. It doesn't matter if they come at you with their anger. Wish them a calm, accepting mind. And radiate that feeling to them. Okay. So I've been talking for a while. It's time for you to ask questions. Here, over here.
So I usually blame myself if I do something wrong, and that kind of like make me very negative. So,
yeah.
Yeah. And in this case, how can you relax?
Can you forgive yourself?
Not really.
Well, that's another part of what I teach, is how to forgive yourself. See, we can do 25 things in a day that are absolutely brilliant and help other people and makes everybody happy, and we do one thing that's questionable in our mind. What do you think about? The 25 things you did to help other people, or that one thing that is questionable? It might have been right, it might have been wrong. Who knows? Doesn't really matter. You have to be able to forgive yourself for making a mistake. If we don't make mistakes, we're not going to learn. But don't make the same mistake twice. You forgive yourself for not understanding. You forgive yourself for causing yourself pain or anybody else around you pain. And you stay with the forgiving yourself until you really do. And you'll know when you do, because your mind will say, I don't need to do this anymore. Your intuition will tell you. But we're our own worst enemy. Now, most of the time when I give a talk about the Eightfold Path, I don't use the standard words for the Eightfold Path. I call it harmonious. Harmonious perspective, right view. Harmonious imaging, right thought. Harmonious communication, right speech. What is harmonious communication? Who do you talk with more than anybody else in the world? Yourself. Who do you criticize more than anybody else in the world? Who needs to get over that bad habit? See, the Buddha said, if you truly love yourself, you will never harm another being. But we wind up beating ourselves up so much of the time and making ourselves miserable that we walk around in emotional snits. And we cause not only ourselves pain, we give that pain to other people so they can get emotional about it. Well, are you practicing what the Buddha taught? Not really. You have to learn how to forgive. I've written a book on forgiveness. It gives all the instructions. Do we still have some?
Out there.
Out there. And if you can't get one, write to us and we'll send you one. It's that simple. Any of the books that I publish, you can get for free if you want. And we'll send them to you. It's just words on a paper. You got to do it. Okay. And you will see that you stop being so hard on yourself. And when you stop being so hard on yourself, you start having compassion for other people. It all starts with number one. Gotta watch this one. And gotta practice. Too many people think that meditation is only about sitting. Well, you have to sit in this way and you have to hold your hand. Now, I wrote a book that's called Meditation is Life. Life is meditation. Do you have hindrances arise in your daily life? Of course. Do you think you need to sit meditation right then and take care of them? No, you need to learn how to use the six R's. Six R's is right effort. Six R's will take you all the way to Nibbana. I guarantee it. That's a pretty strong guarantee.
In writing,
I'll put it in writing if you want it. I've seen it happen way too many times. I know that Nibbana is not just some philosophy. So, be kind to yourself. Be gentle with yourself. And forgive yourself. Okay?
Thank you.
Yeah. Other questions? Yeah.
I shouldn't crave for the permanence on that type of career. Am I too attached to a certain identification of career? Should I move to something else? Where is the wisdom? You know, it's a very complicated.
Well, yeah, it is, and it's very simple to answer. When you start to do meditation, your mind starts to become quieter. And you start to hear your intuitive mind. That's that quiet little mind that tells you to do things and it's always right. When you start listening to that, you'll know the answer. Listening to your intuitive mind. And the quieter your mind becomes, the easier it is to recognize it when it happens. But you have to pay attention to it. Okay? To learn patience. One thing my teacher kept on telling me, patience leads to Nibbana. And I was fine as long as I got it when I wanted it. But when I didn't, hey. So.
When you say, when you meditate and then you get distracted and then you go away on that feeling and then you have to come back to the object of your meditation.
Yeah.
What is the object of your meditation? It depends on if you meditate or is it...
Well, I teach loving-kindness meditation, so the object of meditation is that warm, fuzzy feeling in the center of your chest. You make a wish for happiness, and you have to feel the wish. This is not reciting a statement over and over and over again. You have to feel the wish So you know what it feels like to be peaceful and calm. Okay. Bring that feeling, put it in your heart, radiate that feeling to yourself or your spiritual friend. So it's three different parts to the object of meditation, the way I teach. One of the things that I tell people, especially if they have problems like that, is that giving life is one of the highest forms of making merit. Okay? I'll give you a present day example. I had a student that she was really a good meditator. She could sit for 4 hours without moving. Really good. I went away, I came back. She called me up the night I got back. I'm not going to meditate anymore. Why? I can't sit for more than 30 minutes. I don't care. You have to sit 1 hour. So I hung up. Next day she calls up, I'm going to quit. And I said, what precept did you break? And she said, I didn't break any precept. I said, okay, what precept did you break? She said, well, actually, I like to keep a very clean kitchen. And in Asia, that's a difficult thing to do because there's bugs around all over the place. And there was a line of ants that were walking along, and I tried to very nicely brush them away. And I left, and when I came back, the ants were all over everything. So I went and got my shell detox, or tox, I guess it is, and I sprayed them and killed all those bugs, and I haven't been able to sit since. So I said, okay, now we know what the problem is. Now, she was in Malaysia. And in Malaysia, you go to the butcher and they kill the animal right in front of you. And like chickens and that sort of thing, and then clean them and then give them to you. So I said, I want you to go get a couple of chickens. Not kill. Don't kill them. So she bought a couple chickens, and then I told her to go out into the forest and let the chickens go free. Now, think about what happened. The chickens, they see their friends getting their heads lopped off. They're not real wild about being there. They have the fear of death on them. And then all of a sudden, they get grabbed. Oh, jeez, not good. And they tie the feet up, and they're going, well, they must be killing me later. And then take you out into the forest, let go of the string around the feet, set you down, and with that, you make the determination to let go of any past unwholesome action. And they run off for a couple of feet. They'll turn back and look you straight in the eye. Now, the chicken just went from the worst day in their life, they knew they were going to be killed, to the best day in their life, because they're not going to be killed. Okay, that is an extremely strong way of letting go of past karma. Okay? And to finish the story, as soon as she went back home, she sat for 4 hours without any problem. She just had a guilty mind for killing those ants. That's what her problem was. When you break a precept, it turns into a hindrance. When you come and do a retreat with me, I will insist that you take the precepts every day in a language that you understand.
in Asia, you get to do it in Pali. Do you know what you're saying? No. Well, what's the sense of that? And you're not taking the precepts as some kind of rite and ritual. You're taking it as a reminder that I need to keep this. And when people get off retreat, I suggest very strongly that they keep the precepts every day. When you keep your precepts every day, you come and do a meditation retreat, you are going to have very good progress in your meditation. That's a promise. Another one. And I'll put it in writing, too. I'm the representative to the World Buddha Summit in Japan. I represent 32 different sects of Buddhism, and none of them are even close to the same. A lot of the sects of Buddhism right now are cultural. In this country especially. You go to a Thai monastery and the people come up and say, do you speak Thai? Do you want to learn how to speak Thai? They won't say anything about what Buddhism, but they'll want you to learn their language. Not much in the way of Buddhism right now. But we're working on it. So one of the things I do at the end of a talk is share merit. May suffering ones be suffering free, and the fear struck fearless be. May the grieving shed all grief, and may all beings find relief. May all beings share this merit that we've thus acquired for the acquisition of all kinds of happiness. May beings inhabiting space and earth, Devas and Nagas of mighty power, share this merit of ours. May they long protect the Buddha's dispensation. Sadhu, sadhu,
sadhu. Right, thank you guys for coming here. And also thanks, Venerable Bente, for giving such a great speech. So let's give applause to all of you.